to hear it all and to bring them right back to that night where they stood and had to watch their Aoife in pain, having to go through that whole thing, asking and begging for help, and even the patients in there having to actually beg for help and asking to put Aoife in front of them. You know, like, to have to go through that again is just absolutely horrifying. And, like, your heart just goes out to them. It really, really does. And I think there was a lot of anger when they saw the whole extent of this. I don't think people realised the whole extent of what actually went on with Aoife at that time. And it's just, when you hear stories of war zones, chaos, you know, you cannot have confidence in that hospital. You just cannot. And there is a lot of anger going on for years about the issues in that hospital.
Yes, some of those words that were used, as you mentioned, war zone, chaos, the overcrowding was unprecedented. The consultant, Dr. James Gray, describing the emergency department as being like a death trap on the weekend that Aoife Johnston presented. No trolleys available in the ED. There'd been a breakdown in communications between staff, deficits in nursing staff, a lack of ED doctors. Consultants had refused to attend the ED when called upon by desperate nurses. It just sounds like a nightmare.
It does. And I really believe myself that when I hear people telling me, I don't want to go in there, I'd rather die at home than go in that place, you have to believe them, because it is, and you only need to speak to anyone in Shannon and they've either had experience in there or they know somebody that have had a bad experience in there. And only quite recently we had another inquest into the death of Martin Abbott from in there. So they really do need to do something about this. They need to look at Ennis to get it back up safe enough for it to be able to open an A&E, and they need to do that immediately. That needs to happen on the back of this. We need to stand with Aoife's family and other families that have gone through this and push for this.
And indeed on that, Aoife's mother, Carol Johnston, Donna, saying that she'd be terrified to be a patient at the facility. I mean, so sad to hear her say that, yet entirely understandable. And you can only imagine how they feel, because they spoke outside after the inquest about taking Aoife in and saying, you know, we're taking you to the right place. You'll be looked after. There was such confidence and comfort there that she's going to the right place. And they must feel, you know, almost feel foolish for having thought that, given what emerged afterwards, what unfolded.
Well, when you say you're going to a hospital, you do kind of feel like, okay, we're going into somewhere that's going to help us get better. But that hasn't been the case in Limerick for many years. And that, you know, the big mistake was closing the A&Es in 2009 and giving us a supposed centre of excellence, which just has never materialised. And when you look at elderly people saying to me they'd rather die at home than go in there, that there's questions to be answered there. And to think that you're going in to a hospital, I mean, they're telling you that one hospital isn't safe enough to open an A&E, but they're telling you to go into an unsafe situation to get yourself better or to get yourself help. So, you know, that can't go on.
How is the community in Shannon reacting to this verdict? I presume they feel it is, and as the coroner said, it's the only appropriate verdict.
I think what if I can be corrected on this, the way the medical misadventure is, it's because it can't be tied down to one person, because it was systemic. There was more than one person involved in this. And I think people are angry that nobody's going to be held account for this. They are asking the question, what will happen now? Will they actually sit up and listen? Will the government step in now and do something? And there is anger out there and upset. A lot of people are very upset because the Johnston family were well known in Shannon. And Aoife, you know, she was so young, hadn't even finished secondary school. And this was needless. This did not need to happen. She could have got the help. She should be still here today.
Your party leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, raised the case of Aoife Johnston with the Taoiseach in the Dáil, and she told him the reality now is that staff, patients and the public in general feel very unsafe. The Taoiseach, in reply, said the HSC have told him that on the required staffing levels, that the extension of safe staffing to the emergency departments, general and specialised medical and surgical settings is fully funded. He said the budget for UHL was €382 million. That represented a 44% increase in 5 years, the highest increase in funding for any hospital in the country, and that staffing at UHL has grown by over 1,100 since the end of December 2019, so over 2,800 staff to over 3,900 as of the end of last February, a 42% increase in staffing levels in the hospital. What did you make of his response?
There didn't seem to be any urgency in that response. He was just trying to say what he thought was being good, being done in there, when we can see here the reality on the ground is it's not. We need to have our other services brought in here. We need that hospital to be brought up to standard. The beds that they're saying are coming in are just not enough. There's just not enough staff. And that was very clear in the inquest, that there's just not enough being done to help the people in the Midwest to have that service, proper health services, up and running.
Okay, Donna, we really appreciate you speaking to us on this difficult, difficult story and very, very sad story. That is Councillor Donna McGettigan, the Cathaoirleach of the Shannon Municipal District and Sinn Féin general election candidate. And for more on this, the Mialach Fianna Fáil TD, Cathal Crowe, is on the line. Cathal, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Ellen. Thanks for having me on.
Your reaction to the verdict from the inquest into the death of Aoife Johnston at UHL?
Again, I want to offer my sincerest condolences and sympathies to the Johnston family. It is absolutely a travesty what happened to Aoife. She was a young woman who should have been turning 18 this year with her whole life ahead of her. And due to colossal failures in the hospital at the time she was admitted, she lost her life. She went in, as Donna McGettigan said, to get better, and she unfortunately came out to face her own funeral. And that is devastating to the family, and no words from politicians or apologies from HSE can unfortunately reverse what happened 2 years ago, and it is atrocious. I think it's good that finally the coroner's inquiry has verified the family's experience. They saw Aoife struggling for her life. They cried out for help. Other patients cried out for help with her. And it has taken 2 years for that to happen. And I think we need to get to a state apology. We saw the Stardust victims and their families get a state apology at the beginning of this week. Took over 40 years. We now have a coroner's verdict. We've had a HSE apology, but I think there needs to be an official state apology to Aoife Johnston and her family.
Aside from a state apology, Cathal, I think a lot of people will want to see what happens in terms of changes at University Hospital Limerick, and indeed acting on the findings of the inquest. Coroner John McNamara has issued a number of recommendations along with his verdict relating to the future management of suspected sepsis patients in the hospital, covering the manner in which hospital managers can trigger an escalation of services in emergency situations such as those that were experienced in UHL's emergency department on the weekend of Aoife's death. What happens from here, from a government perspective, in terms of acting on those findings and the coroner's recommendations?
Yeah, I'd like to speak about UHL overall in a moment, but first of all, just on those specific recommendations, sepsis protocols were a very big feature of that, and they have been significantly tightened, but they were very lax, I think, at the time at UHL. And could I also say, I'm on the Oireachtas Health Committee, along with Senator Martin Conway, who have examined these protocols. We have brought in Colm Henry from the HSC, we brought in the top clinicians and scrutinise them. I suppose a few things that sprung to mind when we did do this body of work in the last few weeks was that staff turnover, agency nurses and so on can affect how strictly enforced sepsis protocols are. So it goes without saying that if you're a member of the staff in a hospital and you're there for many years, you've had your training, you do your continuous training and you stay up to date with all the protocols. But then someone who's coming in on agency work or someone who's recently transferred into the hospital, they may have come in a week after there was, you know, that training program was delivered. So it's the continuous training, I think, needs to be tightened up. The other really worrying thing, and this is something that I challenged Dr. Colm Henry on, an adult who has had sepsis has a 40% chance. That's a fact. That is what advocacy groups and scientists tell us. They have a 40% chance of sepsis returning. And yet, in triage, only up until the beginning of this year, the question was not being asked of any patient, not just UHL, but nationally. Did you ever have sepsis before? Did you ever have sepsis before? It's a tick-the-box question. If someone has had sepsis before, they're at very high risk. If they hadn't, they're treated differently. There's management, I think, major management shortcomings here. Staffing, the rostering, the ability to have clinical decisions made by higher level clinicians on a 24/7 basis. These are all things that that are being worked on. And
does the government, Cathal, need to be doing more? I know quite often it's mentioned, well, sufficient money has been given by the government to UHL, but does there need to be more than just giving them money and kind of letting them get on with it?
The money being pumped into UHL, and you mentioned it a moment ago, it's 44% increase in funding. It's colossal, bigger than any other hospital group in the country, staffing too. And you have to ask, and we are asking, why are the outcomes not changing for patients? Okay, some people and some people do have very good outcomes coming out of UHL, some don't. Some have atrocious outcomes and people have died on trolleys there. We acknowledge that. I think the systematic failures in UHL go back to, and I've said this many times in your show, and perhaps I'm a black sheep in this view, but I'm unapologetically a black sheep. 2009, the political decision, my own party were in government, to Mary Harney was Minister for Health, to build a centre of excellence in UHL, never materialised. They never invested with the economic downturn, with successive governments. That decision failed this region. The winding back of A&E in Ennisline and St John's failed the region. And I believe there's an inevitability. There is an inevitability that in the coming years, this region will need a second 24-hour A&E, simply for the reason that we already have close to 500,000 people. Our population is on the rise. You cannot funnel all of these 500,000 people through one system when in Dublin you have double the population going through 8 accident emergency departments. Mm.
And indeed,
or health-wise, it's unthinkable.
You're not the only one saying that. I mean, Donna mentioned that earlier on, that reconfiguration in 2009 was a big mistake. She also said that this just highlights the necessity to get Ennis General, the ED, back up and running immediately. Anytime that this issue is raised, we hear that there's concerns around patient safety, but Should and will more consideration be given now to reopening the ED at Ennis Hospital, put the money in to make sure it's safe for patients and ensure that what happened to Aoife Johnson doesn't happen again?
Yes, absolutely is the answer. But getting to that point needs a little bit of explanation, because too often this gets lost in soundbites. We should have a second A&E. We should have a Model 3 hospital. But what we heard just 3 weeks ago, and I was at UHL, along with Martin Conway and along with David Cullen and Donna's colleague and the spokesperson for health, we heard loudly, clearly and plainly from the nursing unions and the medical unions and management, the frontline people now, that it would be unsafe in the morning to say, do you know what, we're upgrading in Ennisline and St John's and we're reopening Accent University. It would be unsafe. That is a fact. And we do not want to make things more unsafe. And the reason it's unsafe, if I could just elaborate, is going through the doors of A&E is one thing, being triaged is one thing, but what happens beyond those doors is the real concern. We do not have cardiology, neurology. We do not have consultants in all of those realms. We do not have capacity in those realms. So you need to build that capacity first. You need to have those departments, those faculties, those expertise behind the doors of accidents and emergency before you...
And I don't... Nobody doubts that, but is the case of now or never? Shouldn't the money, attention and energy and money be directed towards all of that? You know, we're hearing about issues of patient safety at Ennis General if the ED was reopened, but take the time, get it up and running, and as Donna said earlier, we're being told it's unsafe at Ennis, but look what's happening in University Hospital Limerick.
Is that I believe Ennis should become a full teaching hospital. UHL, if you go around UHL, okay, you have your permanent staff and your agency staff, but within that you have trainee doctors, trainee nurses, you have incredible experts leading educational and research programs. Similar programs then we have Port Leash, Mullingar Hospital, Port Uncle. These are all hospitals of smaller scale than Ennis, and I think Ennis, an immediate thing we should be looking at here, is a far more expansive educational programme in Ennis. That would build some of the expertise behind those doors that we need. It's until we get the expertise behind the doors and build specialised the reality of it. And I'm wholly supportive of the Friends of Ennis Hospital Group. I've brought them to meet the Minister, I've brought them to meet Bernard Gloucester. They're led up by Angela Caldier, their colleague, and Councillor Killian Murphy's on that too, by the way. They've done fantastic work. There's a document there. And I was disappointed yesterday. I was on national radio and David Cullinan hasn't read that yet. He needs to read that. And we all need to back this, because this is the most logical report I've seen.
You're cutting in and out there, Cathal. I might just put one last question to you in case the line deteriorates further. Speaking of expertise, and Dr. James Gray, a consultant, was one of those who spoke at the inquest. He was the one who described the emergency department as being like a death trap. And he has said that plans to, and we hear quite often speak about this when we're talking about University Hospital Limerick, the 96-bed block, one that is under construction and the one that is due to follow it, that is due to be completed by 2028. He says the plans to add extra facilities to the hospital, they won't solve the problems at UHL. He said neither of those 96-bed blocks, and we know it's only 71 out of the 96 beds in the first one that would be used. He says at least 300 additional beds are needed in University Hospital Limerick to resolve the overcrowding in the emergency department, but will this not take years to do? Is that satisfactory given what we heard during this inquest?
Yes, we've been hearing the 300-bed argument for the past 12 months, and 96 of those are on stream this year, another 96 going to planning, and the third element of those will happen as well. So that is what has been clinically identified, and that is what will happen.
But it's 2024 now, and the second block won't be finished until 2028, and even then, between the two of them, that will come to slightly over half of the 300 that are needed.
No, there is acceleration happening there at the moment. Beds are being delivered rapidly, but I've also said to Minister Donnelly, there are buildings very adjacent to UHL, the South Coast Hotel being one of them, and there's other large, very large buildings, and I've been saying to them that perhaps it is now time in those interim years to look at maybe acquiring some of the less acute bed wards could be maybe brought across the road so that, you know, convalescing patients could, I think, be brought out of the facility. What we need, though, is capacity of beds, because when you arrive in accidents emergency, the most basic logjam is that there isn't space up the hospital ecosystem for you to move to. So until we build those beds, and there's serious inroads being made in that, but Alan, I must stress again, UHL is the most urgent priority, but we cannot, and any politician who says we need to just prioritise UHL is wrong. We need to look at the wider needs of the region, and Ennis General Hospital can play a far greater role than it currently does. There's incredible things going on there. Joe Crow and no relation of mine, and the local injuries unit, the medical assessment unit, but there's huge capacity there with investments to do something even better in Ennis, I think.
But that further role that Ennis could play, you don't believe includes the emergency department?
No, I think you've misheard me throughout the intro. I have said repeatedly, I am supportive of that. Absolutely, and I'll say it again, I am supportive of opening accidents emergency in Ennis with it done in the right way. You cannot magic this overnight. You need to build capacity behind the scenes. That is what I brought that to Bernard Gloucester and the Minister, and arising from my intervention, there is now a task force looking at building that capacity in Ennis, and that is crucial. When the capacity is built up, then whoever the government of the day is then will have a very big decision to make on reopening A&E, but I am supportive of it, but it has to happen in a safe fashion. Safety and positive patient outcome needs to be central here. We began the interview talking about the worst of patient outcomes with Aoife Johnson losing her life in an accident emergency department. That cannot happen again, and whatever we do here forward has to be done in a safe fashion with good solid medical advice.